أعوذ بالله من الشيطان اللعين الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين سيدنا ومولانا أبي القاسم محمد. وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين. The subject is لذات, pleasure, and reaching the heights of pleasure, which is embodied in the lives of the awliya of Allah, the people who have reached the higher stages of faith. You see that the pleasure that they are feeling is a pleasure that we need to aspire to. Now, in order to reach a life of happiness and pleasure, for us to get there, in order for us to achieve a life of happiness and ultimate pleasure, you don't start by loving God. That's the first mistake people make. They think that the beginning of the path is to love Allah. And they feel that, you know, we will love Allah and we will love Ahlul Bayt and we will do this and we, alhamdulillah, will become aashiq and a lover of Allah. My friends, the path to happiness doesn't start here. Really, this doesn't start here, and it's a misconception. You start loving, or you think that you are loving Allah, when you are not, you will fall into delusions about who you are and what you are. And that's when we start becoming big-headed, arrogant. We think that, you know, I'm a lover of Ahlul Bayt. No, it's not, you know, we are not. And I explained yesterday, you know, that really we want to love them. Being a lover is a whole different situation. It's a whole different way. Just as I gave the example of Mitham et Tamar, look at him. He was a lover of Ahlul Bayt. He was a lover of Imam Ali. You know, I mean, how many times a day we think about Imam Ali? Right? How many times a day we think about Imam Ali? That's not love. Yes, we admire them. We admire them. We want to feel the love for them. And then obviously Allah's stage comes above that. You know, because once you recognize Ahlul Bayt and you saw how beautiful they are, how beautiful Imam Hussein is, and how beautiful Imam Ali is, how beautiful the Prophet is, how beautiful Fatima is, how great they are. Once you recognize that, then comes the chance for us to recognize the creator of Hussein, who made him that beautiful. How beautiful must he be? That's a whole different state of being. So the first stage of reaching a life of happiness is not love, my friends. Love of Allah is never the beginning. It is the conclusion of our path, not the beginning of our path. We reach that after much effort and much struggle. We reach that state of creating love in our hearts for Allah. That's the state we want to reach. So that's number one. First thing is that this path to a life of happiness and ultimate pleasure doesn't start with the love of Allah. Second thing, this path of reaching happiness also doesn't start by avoiding the love of dunya also. Yes, it doesn't start by avoiding the love of dunya. You know, you say that, you know, I have divorced the dunya just like Imam Ali has done. No, you can't divorce the dunya. Right? You're stuck with it. You know, it's not easy to take out the love of dunya from your heart. And Allah didn't want you to go through this futile struggle at the beginning of your journey. Because if you go through the struggle at the beginning of your journey, you will just find frustration because, admit it, you love it. Right? It's there. You like the dunya. You love dunya. You love the things in dunya. Allah didn't want you to fight this love at the beginning of the path. You know, when you reach the state of Irfan and high stages of love of Allah and Ahlul Bayt, then this love of dunya, this hubbid dunya, will go away from your heart. But before that, there's no way to get rid of it. And fighting it and trying to struggle to get rid of it is just going to make you frustrated. It's just going to make you frustrated. That's the way it is. That's why Allah never wanted you at the beginning of the journey to fight your desire for dunya. He didn't want you to fight that. That's not where we began the journey. And this is the next place where people get confused about how do we reach ultimate happiness. How do we reach that state of just, man, I'm just having fun now. That's it. You don't reach it by trying to divorce the dunya. Imam Ali divorced the dunya when he says, I divorced the dunya 3 times. That's Imam Ali. Right? That's Imam Ali. We need to work a little bit to reach that state. Don't think that we are at his level. Right? As I said, you know, really, Allah has kept Ahlul Bayt as a example for us so that we can reach them, not think that we are them. We are not that. You know, we are just who we are. We are at the beginning of the journey. We want to reach there. We have good intentions, and I want to become good. Once a person recognizes himself, looks at himself like this, then he will be honest with himself. That's where it starts. My friends, you can never cure someone who doesn't admit he has a problem. Really. If I am in a state of denial, then no one can help me and advise me to anything good. First, I need to accept that I am here at this level. Then maybe I will be helped. But if I don't admit it, and if I think that I'm up there somewhere, I am the Don, I'm the big shot, the top gun, you know, the head honcho, what will happen is that I am living in a delusion. I'm living in a delusion here. And that's exactly what happens to people when they think that they have divorced the dunya and I have become muttaqi now. Take it easy. You know, we haven't gotten there yet. You know, because the path to get there, we haven't treated it. So how can we get there? If the road from here to Houston is, I don't know, what is it? I-35 or what? 45, there you go. Right? If you haven't gone that road, then you haven't reached Houston, don't worry, right? Or Kansas. It doesn't matter, my friends, this is the way it is. Actually accept the fact that I am starting my journey. This is the best thing for us. Accept who we are. This is what I am. I'm not a big shot. I'm not so big. I'm just someone who wants to get to Ahlul Bayt, who wants to love Ahlul Bayt, who wants to treat this path. This is where we start. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. So what is the first step towards this life of happiness? What is the first step a person must take in order to reach Allah, in order to reach Ahlul Bayt? What is the first step? My friends, the first step is submission. Taslim. Not taslim, I mentioned it yesterday. We want to talk about it a little bit more because it is important. Taslim means to get in line, to make your nafs and your desire get in line. Just listen to what Allah says. Don't argue. What are you arguing for? What are you arguing for? You know, Allah says, do this. And I'm like, why? Why? Because I said so. But Allah, you know. Why are you asking me why? Don't you believe that I know better than you? Don't you believe that I am God? Don't you believe that my intelligence is more than yours? La ilaha illallah. Don't you believe that? If I'm telling you this, then obviously it's for your own good. It's to make you better, right? That's why I'm telling you, I'm not trying to play games with you. Allahu Akbar. Allahu Akbar. All right, all the brothers, inshallah, just move forward. I see a lot of people are waiting outside to come in. There's no room in the back, so just a lot of room over here. So, inshallah, just send a salawat and move forward. And the sisters also, pack in. We are packed in here, and you shouldn't judge the size of Mu'min Center, based on the crowd right now. Because, trust me, every center in the world falls small on Ashura. That's the way it is. No matter how big you make it, it's going to become small. Because you make the walls bigger, then Hussein will bring in more lovers. That's the way it is, my friends. And so what happens here, the first step is submission. Submit to Allah. That's it. Do what Allah is telling you to do. Just do it. You see, this nafs, this rebellious nature, this instinct of nafs that we have is telling us why. Why should I do it? You see, this is what needs to be disciplined first. This is the first step of every journey towards Allah and Ahlul Bayt. Discipline yourself. Discipline your nafs. Make it listen. Submit. Now, obviously, it's not an easy job, right? I'm not saying it's easy, but I gave you a secret yesterday of how can we make our nafs submit. By nafs, I mean self. How do I make myself submit? And by self, I don't mean my head or my hands or my legs. I mean me. This me who has free choice. This me that has free will. This me. How do I make me submit? This is the first step, my friends. Make it submit. Just do what Allah tells you to do. You see, and how do we reach that? Obviously, we don't reach it through emotions and trying to repeat this all the time. Because that will never make you submit. You will bow down for a while, but then your head will raise itself up again and say, why? If you don't do it the right way, right? You tell your children, right? And this is the wrong way of tarbiyat for our children. You make them do things over and over and over again, thinking that it's going to become a habit when they are not convinced of it. They haven't used their reasoning to get convinced of it. And you're just saying to them, do it. And they do it because they're living in your house and eating your food. And if they don't do it, they'll be grounded. So what happens is that when they keep on doing it, the moment they get their freedom and the ability to choose something else, they'll run for it. Because now, to them, Islam is something that has, frustrated them all their lives. And they run away from it. That's not how you do things. Right? The way you do things is through conviction, through having, to be convinced. You don't get convinced. In Islam, we're not talking about being convinced about prayers. No, you don't need to be convinced about prayers. Why do we pray 5 times a day? Why is Maghrib 3 rakat? Or why do we fast in the month of Ramadan? Or why do we have to go for Hajj? This is not where you get the convincing, really. Where do you need to be convinced? You need to apply your aql and your reasoning and be convinced that Allah is God. That's it. That's where you use your aql. Use your reading. Use your logic. And first accept that He is God. Accept that He is God first. If you haven't accepted that, then everything will be questionable after that. Everything will be in a doubt after that. Do not make yourself say, okay, you know, I'm just going to make myself pray all the time, pray until I get a habit. It doesn't work like that. You'll get frustrated, and the first moment of comfort and relaxation or other enticement and attraction that you see, you will leave that prayer. Just like people have left the Prophet. You know, that Allah says in Surah Jumu'ah, right? He says that these people, whenever they see business, a business deal and money, in our day's job, you know, they run away from you and leave you standing all alone. Tarakuka qa'ima. You're standing all alone, Prophet. No one's around you. They leave that. Why? Because they haven't been convinced that Allah is Rabb, that He's God. So that's my friends, first we need to be convinced about Allah. I'm taking it easy on you right now. I want the youngsters here to really understand this, because it's not something that I am saying, that's why you should listen to me. Recognize this to be you and your nature and your own logic. I'm just going by what human logic is saying. What I am, you know, what I as a human being am thinking. Not I as an alim who learned in the house and learned these things. Now I'm forcing you to believe in them. It's not, there's no force at all. Really, there's no force. Look at it as reality and then accept it as reality. Be convinced about it as reality. So first of all, is submission. How do we submit to Allah? My friends, the way that we submit to Allah, the secret of really reaching submission to Allah is by recognizing that Allah controls our life. We don't control our life. Yes. You know, don't you think that Allah would have made you strong? How hard was it for Allah to make you strong in every aspect of your life? You know, I got, you know, I am tall, I got big muscles, you know, no one can even come close to me. Right? Yeah, you know. Or He could make your voice more like husky, speaking like that. Then people will listen to me, you know, when I talk. Right? Understand that. Was it hard for Allah to do that? I mean, if He made you like this, He could have made you a different way, right? And if you look at everyone, you see everyone has some sort of a fault in them. He made them like that so that there's a weakness in everyone, right? You will see, for example, this guy who's short and scrawny and all that, but you see he's smart. He's a nerd, right? He's smart. Right? And you see this book, you know, this huge football player, you know, big guy and all that, but you see he's dumb. Really? You see that all the time, right? You know, and then you're like, what happened? You know, it's better if you don't open your mouth. You know, shut up. It happens. You see this, right? Allah has made everyone differently and gave weakness to them differently. And when you see that weakness that you have, then you know that, wait a minute, Allah, you made me like this. Allah says, yes, I gave you this weakness. And you see everyone has their own weaknesses. It might be one, more, I don't know, whatever weaknesses it is. But they have weaknesses in order that they can understand that they are not perfect. That they are weak. Recognize, I'm weak. I am fragile. Really, how fragile are you? You take a wrong step coming down the stairs and there goes your ankle. And you are bedridden for 2 weeks. That's what happens, right? How fragile are we? You know, we eat the wrong food and that's it. We're in bed for 3 days. We have an allergic reaction and there we go. Can't do anything now. I can't even enjoy my food. I can't enjoy even waking up. You see that? We are fragile. Allah made us fragile. Now when we look at our life, I want us to see how many choices do we have, how much free will do we really have? I want us to see this today. Understand, how much free will do you think you have? Let's look at it. When you were born, did you have a choice where and when you'll be born? No, we didn't, right? Good. So there goes our birth, and we are born. We didn't even know about it, right? La ilaha illallah. Do you have a choice in death? You know, you'll see that. And you can say, well, yeah, I mean, you know, I can choose how I want to die. Yes, you can. But that's the only choice you have. How do you want to die? You want to die a good death or a bad death? You want to die in the way of Allah or not in the way of Allah? That's the choice you have, right? You have the choice of that, a little bit. But other than that, death is not in your choice. La ilaha illallah. Do you have a choice of the family you'll come into? These are your parents. You know? And now, you know, I'm, for example, 11 years old, 12 years old, you know, I say, Ya Allah, you know, can I trade? You know, that's it. These are your parents, right? You're born in this house. You're stuck there. You had no choice. Do you have a choice with your family that you have? You don't, really. Who are going to be your cousins? You can't, you know, for example, if I go to my uncle and say, Uncle, listen, the children that you will have are going to become my cousins and they will they'll be influential in my life. So these are the type of cousins I want. It doesn't happen. It's not your choice. You're just given that, right? It's forced on you. My friends, look at this. And then we go forward. Really, what do you have a choice in? Even, like, for example, I want to grab a taxi, a cab. Do you have a choice in that? That's what we think, right? We do have a choice. You know what? I don't want that taxi. I want this taxi. I want that taxi. How much choice do you have there? Tell me. Your choice is limited to the taxis that are there, the cabs that are there. And that also in that, you don't have a choice. Why? Because you wanted this taxi, and as soon as you want to go for that taxi that you wanted, someone else hailed it. No, I wanted that taxi. It doesn't matter. He got it before you. Right? Or you wanted to get this taxi that's going by, and as soon as you wanted that, something came into your throat and you coughed and it went by. I wanted that. My friends, our choices really are limited. The choices that we make are limited. Most of the things that are happening in our life are happening not because of me, but because of Allah. He's the one doing that. You know what he ended as? What we end up as, you know, like for example, you give a test that's multiple choice. You only have like four choices. A, B, C, D. So your choice and your free will is limited to that multiple choice. Four things, choose one. Four things here, choose one. Maybe five, maybe six. But it's limited. That's it. This is our life. Understand what we are choosing. Understand where we are headed. I mean, where the choices are. Because if we don't understand this, really, we cannot submit to Allah. We need to understand this reality that it's Allah who has made a grand design for me, a greater plan for me and everyone else. And I just choose the options that Allah is giving me. I choose those options. That's it. My choices are not more than that. Let's go forward. Again, you know, more people are coming in. And I think we have some more room over here. I know the room is packed. Standing room only. So some call it. Salawat. All right, yeah, inshallah, we have room over here, you know, more people can go over here, you know. All right. If you are done with the pledge forms, so inshallah they're waiting for you to return them in, or you can leave it at after him when you leave, inshallah. All right, let's send a salawat now, brothers. All right, my friends, how much choice do we have? Really, this is what we need to understand. And then understand how much influence does Allah have in our lives. A person needs to recognize this reality. You know, for example, I am at the age of marriage and I'm looking for a spouse, right? And I go out and I hear all these majalis from scholars saying that you should look at this in a spouse, you should look at this in a spouse and this in a spouse. So now, as each proposal comes, I'm, you know, looking through my table of, you know, my index of things to look at and saying, you know, strike one, strike two, strike three, you know, he's out, you know, she's out, that's it, you know, I want more, I want this, I want this. You're choosing that, right? My friends, when you ultimately will choose a spouse, do you think that this is your choice? Understand that. I want you to understand this. Really, do you think it's your choice? You know, because when we don't look into these things, we really don't understand what's going on with our lives. And when we don't know what's going on with our lives, we don't know what role does Allah play in our lives. So we need to know first where this is happening. My friends, I chose my wife. No, I chose out of the options Allah gave. And then when I choose, that's the wife that Allah wanted for me. No, maybe it's not clear. Let me read a hadith for you. Yes, yes. Exactly. Right? It is a difficult subject. So now let me read a hadith for you, and inshallah I will clear that up. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. My friends, understand this very well. Yes, what the brother mentioned is there. There's jabr wa tafweed, bal amru bainahum. The amr is between these two. There is jabr and there is tafweed. It's in between that. That's what we need to recognize. Really, that's what we need to recognize. Let me read this hadith for you. You know, it says like, لَوْ دَعَى لَكَ إِسْرَافِيلْ وَجِبْرَائِيلْ وَمِيكَائِيلْ وَحَمَلَةُ الْأَرْشِ وَأَنَا فِيهِمْ. Rasulullah is saying this. If Israfil, you know who Israfil is? Who's Israfil? The trumpet guy, yes. The one who'll blow the trumpet, right? The angel, right? لَوْ دَعَى لَكَ إِسْرَافِيلْ. If Israfil prays for you, and Jibreel prays for you, and these all like archangels, you know, the top-notch angels, right? Wa Mikael, and Mikael prays for you. Wa Hamalatul Arsh, and if the holders, those who are holding up the arsh and throne of Allah, those angels, if they pray for you. Wa Ana Fihim, Rasulullah is saying, if I am amongst them, and we all get together and pray for you, Ma Tazawajta Illa Imra'ata Lati Kutibat Laka. You will not marry anyone except the spouse that Allah has appointed for you. Rasulullah's du'as cannot change that. La ilaha illallah. You know? Friends, understand this. These things need to be understood. You made the choice. Allah gave you a multiple choice test and make this choice. Allah has a plan for you because you wanted it. Either you made the intention of being good or you made the intention of being bad. You said to Allah, Allah, I want to be a good person. I want to be a Shia of Ahlul Bayt. I want to be a Shia of Ali. Okay, Allah heard your intention and now He has made a program for you. He has made a program for you so that you can reach that state. You can reach that state. Now, if you were bad and said, you know what, I hate Ahlul Bayt, I hate this, okay, you know, Allah will, you know, you are going to go through these things. and you will end up where you want it to be. You made the intention. Since you wanted to be good, now you have left, now you have made yourself enter a program that Allah has made for you to make you reach that. Understand this, my friends. This is something we need to understand, that how much, what role is Allah playing in our lives. If we don't understand that, we will be completely unknowing of what's going on. I think I'm in charge of my life. I make the decisions in my life, and I do this, I do that, you know. Really, my friends, you know, I mean, it's like this, you know. You have a, you know, those airplanes that land, right? You know, when they are reaching the airport, right? They take the airplanes out of the control of the pilots, and the people in the control tower take over. And say, all right, you know what? This is what you do. This is what you do. And the pilot is just, okay, following orders, right? That's what he does. They take him out. The reason is because we have all this technology here, and we can see where you're coming from and do more to make sure that you land safely. If it was in your hand, you know, you'll be hearing it in the news almost every other day. Right? That's why they don't leave it in the, you know, hands of the pilot. They don't leave it in their hands. They will take charge of the airplane to make sure that it lands safely. And the pilot just follows orders and he says, okay, you take over. It's in your hands now. That's it. That's how it happens. My friends, when you want to land, when you want to become something, now Allah takes over your life. He takes over your life and says, now you're in my hand because now you wanted to come here. You want to reach here? It's not in my hands, really. If it was in my hands, I would be somewhere else. So I gave this example before, right? You know, just one hadith I will read from Imam Ali Radha alayhi salam. Salawat alayhi. And listen to it carefully. He says that whenever Allah intends to do something to a person, when He wants to change you, when He wants to mold you, when He wants to make you, make something of you, so Imam says that He locks your mind, freezes your mind, your aql. He freezes your aql, makes the changes that He wants, and then unfreezes it. He unfreezes it. And then you'll be like, wow, what happened to me? How did I become like this? How did I become like this? I gave this example. I don't know if, because most of you were not there at the speech that I gave before. I gave the example there, right? But I will repeat it because most of you are not there so that you understand what how this happens. Really, my friends, all of you, you know, when you were young, when you were young, in your teenage life or your childhood life, you had dreams about yourself, right? What you wanted to become. Some wanted to become, I don't know, when you were young, you know, you want to become a doctor, engineer, football player, you know, right? You're thinking that you'll become Ronaldo, Messi, you know. Each night you'll be like, for example, you know, in your bed, sleeping, dreaming about being messy and, you know, kicking the blanket away. Happens, you know, we dream. You dream of being anything, right? Whatever you dreamt of. Every individual has his own dreams, right? You had your dreams when you were a child of what you wanted to become. When you used to picture yourself as an adult, you had a picture that this is what I want to become when I'm an adult. An idea. You all had that. We all had that. We are human beings. We were children, we had an idea of this is what I want to become. That was my intention. It was my drive. It was my inspiration to become like this. Now, really tell me, when you look at yourself right now, did you ever imagine that you would end up like this? Trust me. Did you ever once, in your childhood, dreamt that, you know what, when Muharram will come, I will go to the Islamic Center every night and be in the Majlis of Imam Hussein? Did you ever once dreamed of that? Look at yourself. I want you to see yourself. You know, don't make me say anything. You see, did you ever dream that, you know what, I want to be a Shia of Ali and that would be the most important thing in my life? No. The only time we heard the name of Ali was from our mother or father or in the majlis. Every time we were taking the name, it was, you know, Ronaldo and Messi and I don't know, whatever. Right? So now what happened? That was your, this was not your intention to become what you have become. You never made the intention to become that. You never had the dream to become this. So now look at yourself and ask yourself, who made me like this? Who made me like this that now I am sitting in the majlis of Imam Hussein on a Saturday evening? I never dreamt of that. I never wanted this. I never had this idea. My friends, then maybe you can appreciate Allah. Thank you for not listening to my dreams. Thank you for not making me what I wanted to become, and you made me better than that.
Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad salawat.
The influence that Allah has on our lives, if we can understand the reality, how much influence He has in our lives, then maybe from that point we will understand that, wow, you know what? I'm not in charge. It's Allah who's in charge. And when Allah is in charge, then you know what? Whatever He does is going to be for my good. Understand this. If you understand this, send us salawats. Alright, you know, how does it happen? We don't know, my friends. How does it happen? We really don't know. We can't even start to think. We can't even start to imagine how does this happen. Really look at it, because you want to believe in Allah and submit to Him. This is how it is, by this realization. That my life is in Allah's hand. Allah, you control my life. That's it. So now how does it happen? We don't know. Really don't know how it happens. It's Allah who does it, and we just see ourselves and see the change that came into my life when I look in the mirror in my bathroom. I look at that mirror and says, wow, how did I become this? How did I become this? Right? And then if I can go back and see the different things Allah did in my life to bring me to this situation, that now I can cry for Imam Hussein. Really? I mean, really, this is it. My friends, we don't know how it happens. How, you know, how will it happen? But you know what? When it happens, we can see it. Allah showed that to us in certain places in the Quran and Hadith. Maybe I should mention it so that you can understand it. You know, to understand how Allah does things to you, Allah, you know, that whole incident of Musa and Khidr. If you remember that incident of Musa and Khidr, and that Musa went along with Khidr, and, you know, Khidr was doing some things, you know, that Musa objected to. When he objected to that, you see, and when he was doing it, what's happening? You know, I mean, like, Khidr goes, he makes a hole in someone's boat, you know, and Musa is like, what do you do that for? And Khidr says, I told you, you know, don't object, don't say anything, but you just destroyed people's property. You know, like for example, if some naughty kids go outside, right, and scratch someone's car. Like, what do you scratch his car for? You know, you'd be wondering, it's haram, right? You can't destroy someone's property. And Khidr was doing it. Then he goes, and worse than that, he kills a kid. He kills a kid, and Musa is like up in arms. Whoa, what are you doing? What are you doing? This is a kid. How can you take his life? Khidr was doing it, right? And then he goes and helps oppressors, zalimin. He helps them. right? By building a wall for them, free labor, you know, giving them. So what happens is that Musa can't handle it. What was Allah showing in all this incident? I mean, you know, is this a game that he's playing, you know, hide and seek, you know, hey, you know, Jeopardy, you know, try to understand what I'm doing, you know. No, it wasn't that, my friends. What Allah is showing in this whole incident is what's going on behind curtains that we don't see, that Allah is doing and interfering and influencing people's lives. That we have no clue how this is happening. He just opened a window so we can see what's happening in ghaib. This is what's happening in ghaib. So if a person like Musa, who's a Nabi, a prophet of Allah, Ulul Azam prophet, cannot understand what's going on in ghaib, what about us?
Nare takbir!
Allahu Akbar! Allahu Akbar! Allahu Akbar!
How can we understand what's going on in ghaib? But when he is doing it, he is doing it for the betterment of people. You see, this is where you want to come to. Allah, whatever he's doing, is doing for the betterment. Yes, maybe I will go through a hard time. Those parents who lost their child because Khidr took their life went through a hard time. And he said that Allah will replace them with a better son. Right? With a better child. Okay, but that better child will come later. Right now, I as a parent, I'm going to cry. I'm going to mourn and grieve because I lost my son. What will happen later is that, my friends, the reason we don't understand what's going on and we can't comprehend what's going on is because we are just reading a page of a book and trying to judge the book. Yes. You know, for example, you're seeing the last scene of a movie, you know? You know what happens when you see the last scene of a movie? You know, the last scene of the movie is always when the hero is beating up the villain, right? He's like, you know, beating him up, you know, putting him in, you know, this and that. If you just see that, you'll be like, man, there's such a bad person here. He's bad. He's horrible. Look at him. He's just beating him up mercilessly, you know. He's beating up to a pulp. If you had seen the whole movie and saw what the villain did, then you'll be like, good, let him have more. Give it to him. That's what you'll be. That's what happens. If you just see one scene of a movie or read one page of a book, you cannot judge the book. Our vision and our knowledge is just looking at one aspect or one page of what's going on in the world. And if we now try to judge what's going on in the world, we will never be able to understand it. And we'll always make a misjudgment. That's how those atheists and agnostics, they say, oh, why don't you go to a children's hospital and see what God is doing to them, you know? Listen, you're just reading one page of the book and you're making a judgment on all of creation, of what's going on. You can't do that. My friends, the idea is that Allah knows the whole picture. We don't know the whole picture. And so now when we don't know the whole picture, and he's the director, he's the producer, he's the story writer, he's the one who's making us go around and do things and doing things to us, when we know that Allah is in charge, then what happens? Allah, since you are in charge, then I am going to just sit back, relax, and have fun. Because you're in charge. And I know that whatever you are going to do is going to be good. Understand? Now you have reached this state. I want you to reach this state, my friends. This stage that I'm talking about right now. How did you get there? Because Allah, you are in charge of everything. You are doing these things. I am just making those small decisions. These things that Allah is doing is for test. Our ikhtiyar, our free will is where? In giving those tests. Allah gives the test, we take the test. Multiple choice. Allah says, here's your test, choose between these four. I choose this, good. That's right. I choose this, wrong. But don't worry, if you're wrong, then Allah wants the best for you, right? So if you made a wrong choice in life, then Allah will come back and give you another test to rectify why you made the wrong choice. Why you made the wrong, He'll rectify that for you. This is how Allah interacts with us. He gives us ibtila, azmaish, imtihan, exams, trials. We are taking that test and giving back the paper to Allah. Allah, this is my choice. Allah say, make this choice. I made this choice. Good. You made the right choice. Now your test will be harder. Next test will be harder. You made the wrong choice. No back. Let's go back a little bit and you have this test right now so that you can rectify this wrong decision. You see how Allah is now interacting with us? My friends, this is Allah's interaction with us. Once we understand this is the interaction that we are going through in life, then we will become calm, composed. And we'll be relaxed because Allah is in charge. Allah, you're in charge. If I make a mistake, you're here to pick me up. If I do something wrong, you're here to grab my hand to make sure that I don't fall down too much. We are here. La ilaha illallah.
Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad
salawat. Allah,
can we please move up? There's people standing in the back.
All right, inshallah, move forward. Inshallah, we can move a little bit more, pack ourselves, and we have some more room here. Guys, you can come here. Come this side. Come this side. You can come this side. Don't worry. Over here. You can sit facing me. Don't worry. You're good. Good. Now we can move forward a little bit. Inshallah, you know, get the last throng of people coming in. Afwaja. They're coming in here. Alhamdulillah. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. My friends, now Allah is the one who determines what we get as tests. These tests, which in Islamic terms is called muqaddarat. Muqaddarat or takdir is the things that Allah does in our lives that we have no control over, and the reason He does it is to test us in order that we get better, that we improve, that we reach the higher stages. He makes us go through that, and our ikhtiyar and free will is in giving those tests. We are just giving tests here. You know, people, they look at life, you know, in a completely different way. My friends, brothers and sisters, understand this. The only reason Allah brought you into this life is so that He can test you. Yes. الَّذِي خَلَقَ الْمَوْتَ وَالْحَيَاةِ لَيَبْلُوَكُمْ أَيَّكُمْ أَحْسَنُ عَمَلًا. He has created life and death so that He may test you, to make you better. That's what's happening, my friends. He's testing you, making you go through these trials. This is what He's doing. People have a completely different understanding of what life is. You know, they live in this life. Really, people, their idea and their attitude about this life is that they live in this life thinking that, you know what, Allah made us and He brought us to earth because Jannat is under construction. And so He wanted us to have a vacation here until we go back. You know, they think this is a vacation they're in, relaxing. This is not a vacation. You are in an exam room. You are in a test room. You are being tested. This is what it is. You know, you're not in a vacation here. This is how we live. Many people live our lives like that. Completely not knowing what's going on. And this is the reason why it's so important to recognize reality. Reality is that, Allah, you are taking my test. I can see it in my life, what I'm going through. But here's the thing. I know that you're in charge. How do we make sure that we are tested in the best way possible? Let me just give you that also. And inshallah, we will go towards the ending for today. Right? How do we get the best muqaddarat determined for us? What is the best, you know, test for us? How do we make sure we do that? Well, here's the thing. This answer was given by Hazrat Fatimatu Zahra Salamullah Alayha. You know, when Allah looks at you, and this is His interaction with you, you know, that He's testing you, giving the test, she said that you want to make sure that Allah gives you the best test and the best muqaddarat, and the best takdir. He says, then do this. You just make sincere ibadat and worship to Allah. Sincerely, without any hang-ups, without any ego, without anything, just bow your head before Allah. Be sincere. Allah, I'm just doing it because I am nothing, you're everything. Not with the love of Allah. Not with Allah's love, because you can't love Allah right now. Leave that alone. That's too much for you. Not with the fear of hellfire also, because we haven't understood what the hellfire is, let alone us being afraid of it. We don't fear hellfire. Right? Leave that alone. That hellfire, the whole business of hellfire, really, we don't fear hellfire. Don't say, oh, I'm afraid of the hellfire. No, we are not. Right? Are you really afraid of the hellfire? You know, you're more afraid of the fire here than in the hell. This is how it is, right? You see, we don't look at reality. I'm not at that stage of fearing hell. Now, that was Imam Ali who said that, I won't worship Allah for the fear of hell, or for the greed of Jannah, I worship him because of Allah. That's Imam Ali. Don't look at yourself like that. Really. Now, our recognition of Allah and love for Allah, that's very far away. We're not even afraid of hell. We're not even afraid of hell. So don't really. That's the reason why people get hurt in their growth. And they see fluctuations in their prayers. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's not good. Sometimes my heart's in it, sometimes it's not in it. Why is that happening? Because we haven't taken the first step yet. That's submission. Submission comes not by fearing hellfire or having the greed for Jannah. Those are faraway things, my friends. Submission comes. Just do this. Have the fear of what Allah will do to you here. This is a fear that we can actually touch. And it's tangible. Allah, give me more rizq. This is something that makes sense to me. Give me more risk. Increase my risk. Allah, just keep me safe from, you know, horrible accidents. This is a fear that I can and you can feel. Come down to our level and say, wow, just this sort of fear of simple things that is happening in your life, of harm and profit. All these things, Allah increase, you know, give me a better job. Good. Allah is saying, have that fear. That's the beginning stage of a person who wants to go to the higher levels. That's the fear to have. That's the right fear. Simple and healthy. When you fear Allah like that, then yes. Now, you will slowly grow from there. You pray. Why are you praying? Why are you praying? Because really, profit and harm is in Allah's hands. I want to make sure I'm in Allah's good books. Finish. Okay. Good. That's where you start from. You see? And if you don't start from there and start thinking, oh, Imam Ali said, you know, that you should only worship Allah for Allah, my friends, you will be so overwhelmed in your life and frustrated that you will end up saying that, you know, all this is hogwash. That's not how you go there. This is the reason why going towards Imam Hussein, going towards Allah requires steps. Recognizing what is my, where's my level? My level, nothing. Allah, why I'm afraid of you? I'm afraid that, you know what, I won't get up in the morning tomorrow. That's what I'm afraid of you for. I'm afraid that I will lose my job. Allah, I pray to you. God, Allah is saying, make this relationship. This is where you build your relationship with Allah, this interaction. Once you start building that relationship, just do it for a long time, and then slowly you will see that your prayers and your worship will start to increase. My friends, concentration in prayer is not a necessity. You don't need to concentrate in prayers. You know, concentrate in prayer. So, Allah, you know, I'm not going to think what I'm thinking. It doesn't work that way. Your growth is happening by recognizing the taqdeer and muqaddarat of Allah. And then slowly, your conviction in Allah's role in your life grows. And when that grows, then your prayer slowly starts to get accomplished. And when you start to pray, and pray now for some time, be persistent and consistent, then Allah eventually, when He sees that you're ready to receive it, will start giving you small gifts like concentration. That comes from Allah. You don't get it. It's Allah who gives it. You just do what Allah says. Just keep on doing it. You're not praying for pleasure. People think that, you know what, why am I not pleased when I'm praying? You're not at the level of being pleased with prayers. Your prayers are not meant to please you. Your prayers are meant to please Allah. Allah is saying, listen, you pray, let me be happy and you be worried. We are praying so that Allah can be happy, not that I can be happy. That's the reason people have the wrong concept. Oh, when I go to Karbala and there's no people, it was so beautiful, so peaceful, so this, so that. What does that mean? You know, I prayed with so much comfort and so much this. That's not what Allah wanted. Allah wanted you to pray in traffic. My friends, the best prayers you have made are the prayers that you had the most difficult time with. And Allah sees you going through that difficulty and says, look at this servant of mine. He is going through all this difficulty just to carry out my command. La ilaha illallah. This is what it is, my friends. Just keep on doing it. Allah, you are in charge of my life. Keep on doing it. La ilaha illallah. We know what this leads to, my friends. The last thing. What this leads to, it leads to us becoming relaxed. That we are peaceful, composed, unruffled by anything. Whatever goes on in life, you know, you see that, you know, a mu'min who has recognized this aspect of Allah's influence in his life, you know what he is? By, you know how his attitude is, his behavior is? Cool. Yes, C-O-O-L, cool. That's what he is. You know, you'll see him, you know, boom, accident happens. Eh, whatever. You know, I got cancer. Whatever. So what? This is the attitude of someone who has recognized. Yes, the world calls it reckless, irresponsible behavior. And Allah calls it mu'min. Allah calls it, yes, this is a person who has recognized me. You don't care, Allah, you are in charge. Really, I'm cool. That's why the first quality a mu'min gains is that he's cool. He's chilled. You know, completely relaxed. You know, I mean, just like that. You know, you'll be like, you know, but, you know, all this is going on. Relax. What, you think that we are in charge? Allah's in charge. Really, Allah's in charge. Allah says, okay, when you see this, do this. Okay, that's why I'm doing it. Allah, you told me to. Right? There's zulm going on. Allah, you told me to stand up against zalim. That's why I'm doing it. Otherwise, you are in charge. I'm doing it because you asked me to do it. Right? Not because I came to the realization that we should stand up against zulm. No, Allah. I would be too arrogant to make a statement like that. You are in charge, and you told me that whenever you see dhulm, stand up against it. So I stand up against it. This is why we stand. My friends, otherwise, Allah is in charge. Otherwise, if we say that, no, I'm in charge, that's the time we start becoming completely overwhelmed with life. We go into depression. We go into a suicidal mode of living, you know, hating ourselves, despising ourselves because I think I'm in charge. La ilaha illallah. Really, it is Allah who has allowed you, Allah who has allowed you and permitted you to come and sit in this majlis of Imam Hussain. It wasn't you who came. It wasn't your choice. He has brought you here. He has allowed you to come here. You know, you came here So now, what a blessing this is, right? This is a blessing, right? You came to this blessing. Give the credit to Allah. Allah, you brought me here. You brought me to the dhikr of Hussain so I may cry. Really, it is He who brought us here. That's why, what do? When Allah gives this blessing to us? Really, what should we do? When Allah gives a blessing like this and brings us to the majlis of Imam Hussain, read Ziyarat Ashura. What do? At the end, go into sajda. And what do you say? Say it. Allahumma lakal hamdo hamda shakirin. Allah, all praises for you, the praise of a grateful, thankful person. I am thankful, grateful that you have brought me here. Do shukr. This is what it is. Go into sajda and do shukr. You have brought me to the dhikr of Hussain. La ilaha illallah. Truly, my friends, you know, this azah and this mourning of Imam Hussain that Allah has brought you to, He has done a favor on you, meaning all of us. He has done a favor on us. Really, He has done a favor on us. In my life, when it's going to be accounted for, this moment in my life when I'm sitting here and remembering Abba Abdullah and crying for him will be counted as the best moments you have spent on earth. You are not better than this, my friends. This is it. This is your height. This is what he has brought us to. La ilaha. Let me read a hadith so that you can take your minds and your hearts to the son of Fatima. Abu Abdullah has said, he says, لَوْ يَعْلَمُ زَائِرِ وَالْبَاقِ. If my zair, someone who visits me, someone who comes to my ziyarat, and someone who cries for me, baqi is someone who cries, someone who visits me and someone who cries for me, if he knew, لَوْ يَعْلَمُ, if he knew, عَلَى مَا لَهُ مِنَ الْأَجْرِ, what is the ajr and the reward and the compensation of this visit and this crying? If he had known that, لَكَانَ فَرَحَهُ أَكْثَرُ مِنْ جَزَائِهِ, his happiness, his pleasure will be way more than what he is going through in suffering. He will just be elated. In other words, he will be elated. He will be like, wow, that is a reward. That, you know, I don't care what I'm going through in life. Give me more of it. Give me more of it, Allah. If you had known what the ajr of this is. And then he says, وَمَا يَقُومُ مِنْ مَجْلِسِهِ وَعَلَيْهِ ذَنْبٌ إِلَّا وَسَارَ قَيَّوْمٍ وَلِدَتْهُ أُمَّهُ. And as soon as he, when you are in this majlis right now, if you get up from this majlis and leave, meaning when the majlis is done, when you leave from this majlis and you have a sin on your shoulder, it will be removed in such a way as the day that your mother gave you birth. Just like the innocence you came into this world is the innocence by which you leave the majlis of Imam Hussain. La ilaha illallah. Can you believe this? This is, my friend, understand what this means. Ya Allah, la ilaha illallah. Really, let me, you know, when I read this, you know, how can I not spend more time crying for Imam Hussain? He says, Yabna Shabib, this is Imam Radha alayhi salam, he says, Yabna Shabib, in Bakaita ala al Hussain alayhi salam, if you cry for Imam Hussain, Hatta yasila damu'aka ala khaddaik. Until your tears, until the tears that you have reach your cheeks. That's why when you cry, when you're crying, don't wipe out your tears. Don't wipe them out. Let them go onto your beard. Let them go onto your clothes. Make those tears run. Make them go onto your clothes. غفر الله لك كل ذنب أذنبته. He said, Allah will forgive you every sin that you have done. صغيراً كان أو كبيرا. Whether that sin was small or big. قليلاً كان أو كثيرا. Whether those sins were little or more. It doesn't matter. Every sin, no matter however many wrongs and mistakes you have done. When you cry for Imam Hussein, then they are washed away. La ilaha illallah. Now, my friends, really, I haven't entered the musibats yet. I just read these two hadiths so that you can understand your value and how much Allah has blessed you by bringing you here and doing the dhikr. Let me just read one more thing, right? Another hadith, right? I'll just translate it for you. It is said that if a person cannot cry for Hussein, a person cannot cry for Hussein, but his heart feels the pain for Hussein when he hears the dhikr of Hussein. Really, when you hear what happened to Ali Asghar in the hand of Imam Hussein, and if you are shaken by that, if you are moved by that, if you feel pain and hurt because of that, if you feel pain for when Sakina was slapped by these people, and every slap that she was taken, her cheeks were turn red and she would fall to the ground. If you feel pain for that, then Jannat is wajib on you. You haven't even cried. You just felt inside the pain. You felt bad. Just because you felt bad for what happened to Hussein. My friends, understand this. La ilaha illallah. Now, my friends, when we look at ourselves and we are crying, who are we crying for? When we look at those people that we are crying for, who have moved us, who have come into our hearts, who have come into our hearts and they have taken over us, then you will wonder. Then you will see, who are these people? My friends, you know, there is no finer person, there is no more immaculate person, no more gracious and kinder person than Abul Fazl al-Abbas. Really, Abbas really is something else. Abbas is something else. Abul Fazl al-Abbas, really, when you look at him, he is something else. Can you imagine that? We are crying for Imam Hussein, but you know what? It was the reason that the children did not cry in Karbala was because of Abbas. You know, these children, what Abbas was to them, at night, these children will look outside their tent, will put their head outside their tent as soon as they see Abbas and say, everything is all right, Abbas is there, don't worry, Abbas is there. No one's going to come here. No one's going to come here. Abbas is there. Really, this was the feeling in the tents of Hussein, that Abbas was a security, a sense of security to everyone. When they saw Abbas, it was like they felt secured inside. Oh, you know what? Abbas is there. Amu Abbas is there. Uncle Abbas is there. He will take care of it. No one can dare hurt us. He is there. My friends, Abbas was special. Abbas is special. Imam Sajjad said so. He said that ammi al-Abbas, inna ammi al-Abbas la darajatun indallah, that my uncle Abbas has a place before Allah that even yaghbituna awwaluna wal akhirun, that the first and the last, the prophets of Allah will look at that maqam and that daraja and that rank that Abbas has, and they will look at that and they will aspire for it. They'll say, look at Abbas where he is standing. Abbas is special, my friends. Really, Abbas is special. I want you to take in your hands. You know, really, if Abbas, you know, I want to ask you a question. How many books have you written about Abbas? Have you read any books about Abbas? Small little books. How much was mentioned, you know, Abbas did this, did that. You heard a few sentences every year in Majalis, and it's the same things. Nothing different, nothing more. You hear the same things. Right? You hear the same thing that he went to this, he went, you know, you all know what happened, and there's no twist to the story. There's nothing new that's coming. You all know what happened. But when you hear the tale of Abbas, when you hear Abbas's story, you cry in a very bad way. Look at you, the way you cry for Abbas. And if I ask you, what has Abbas done for you? Really, what relationship, personal relationship do you have with Abbas? Did Abbas answer any dua for you? You say, no, no. Did Abbas fulfill a hajat for you? No. Did Abbas come in your dream and embrace you? No. He says, you don't know anything about Abbas. You hardly know anything, just a few things that have been mentioned. You have no personal relationship with Abbas. You haven't seen the beautiful face of Abbas. He's known as Qamar Bani Hashim, right? What is Qamar Bani Hashim? It means he's a symbol of Bani Hashim. He is the face of Bani Hashim. The whole tribe in which Ali Akbar is also there, but Abbas is Qamar Bani Hashim. In which Hussein is there, but Abbas is Qamar Bani Hashim. He is the face of Ahlul Bayt. Imagine how beautiful that face was. Have you seen his face? No, I haven't seen his face. So you haven't read any books about him. You haven't heard a lot about him. You only heard a few things about him. You never had any personal attachment with him. You never had a personal relationship with him. He hasn't come to your dreams yet. He hasn't shown his face to you yet. And you are crying so much for him. Why? Why are you crying so much for Abbas? You know what you will say? You will say, because Abbas is that good. Abbas is that beautiful. Abbas is that good that I should cry for him. Well, my friends, if you don't know anything about Abbas, and Abbas has affected you in such a way that you are crying like this, then imagine how Abbas has affected Hussein. Imagine what Abbas meant to Zainab. If Abbas is so good that he has affected you like this, then imagine when that Abbas who was present before Hussein, who was present before Zainab, how much of their heart he has taken, how much of their love is dedicated to him. Imagine how Abbas has affected them, my friend. You know, this is how it comes out to you. You know, this one incident I'll mention to you so that we'll go forward from here. You know, Abbas, you know, I mean, there, you know, in Iran, I remember this. My friend told me this. He said this is his own experience, right? A friend of mine, he told me he's his own experience he had. You know, in Iran, they have like these taziyeh, these plays that they play out the tragedy of Karbala, different things like that. So it was the, you know, it was Tasua, and they were doing the Taziyah of Hazrat Abbas. And he said that, you know what, he was a child, a very little child. And he said that, you know, he said, I want to be in the play also. So they said, all right, go in the play. You will be one of the children of Hussein who's going to become yatim. You will be here, you stay here, and here's your role. They, you know, they told them, you children inside the tent, they made a tent, and they reenacted, you know, the last stages of Abbas's life when Hazrat Abbas, you know, came to the tents of the children of Hussein and went inside, really, he went inside to say farewell to them. And the children were asking for water. They were told that, listen, when Abbas comes here and says farewell, you say, Ammujan, Ab. Ab, Ammujan, water. Give us water. This is what they were saying. He said that he went there. And, you know, the person who played Hazrat Abbas, he was a very tall, handsome person. Very tall and handsome, you know, and he was a child. So when this person who was acting as Abbas came in the tents and told them or was saying to them, farewell, you know, farewell, he just looked at that and he imagined, he said, I was young. I was in elementary school and I imagined the day of Ashura when Abbas stuck his head in the tents of the children of Hussein and said farewell. I just looked at that and I imagined that, and when my turn came to say Amu Ab, Uncle Water, Water, I could not make myself say it because I didn't want Abbas to leave. My friends, Abbas is special. You know why? Abbas has said that I respected Hussein. I loved him so much, but I had so much respect for him. I want to express my love for Hussein. I wanted to go there. Every time I wanted to express my love, I wanted to kiss Hussein, but my dignity and respect that I had for Hussein was so much that it would not make me go and kiss Hussein. So you know what I used to do to express my love for Hussein? I used to go to the children of Hussein. I used to take their feet and kiss their feet. This is Abbas. Abul Fazl Abbas. This is Abbas, my friends. Now, inshallah, you understood this. Let me go now. Let's go to Karbala now. Let's go to Karbala. You know? Let me read this for you. I wrote this down so that you start hearing this masaib, this musibat of Abbas coming to Hussein when he saw that the army is finished. Now he's coming to Hussein to ask for permission. This was his statement. And I want you to see this, how it's written. Abbas came to him and said to Imam Hussein, Hal min rukhsatin? Hal min rukhsatin? My friends, this was devastating for Imam Hussein. Abbas says, do you allow me to go now? Do you permit me? Give me rukhsat. Free me from this bondage. Free me from this. You know what happened after that? What happened, Imam Hussein? How he replied? He says, Fabaka. Fabaka al-Hussein. Hussein cried. Hussein started weeping. When he heard Abbas say, give me permission, Hussein started weeping. But you know how? Listen to this. Buka'an shadidan aliya. He started crying in a loud way. He started to shriek out. And aloud he was crying, Hussein is shaken that Abbas is leaving. He is shaking that Abbas has asked for permission to leave. La ilaha illallah. Imagine what's going on with Hussein. Hussein says, Abbas, Abul Fazl, Anta sahibu liwai. You are my flag bearer, my alamdar. Abbas, you are my alamdar. And listen to this. Wa alamatu askari. You are the symbol of my army. Abbas, you are the face of my army. You are the symbol of my army. He says, Fa'idha madaita tafarraka askari. If you leave, my army will be dispersed. My army will be dispersed. Faqala Abbas. So Abbas said, Fidaka ruhi akhik. Ya Sayyidi! قد ضاق صدري من الحياة الدنيا وأريد أخذ الثار من هؤلاء المنافقين. عباس إمام حسين آغا, my leader, my chief, my heart has become constrained. I can't take it anymore. I have seen Ali Akbar come back to the tents like this. I can't take it anymore. I saw Qasim being trampled by the horses. I can't take it anymore. Abbas says, I can't take it anymore. Let me go out and get the revenge from these hypocrites. Let me fight with them. Hussein says, فَقَالَ الْحُسَيْنَ عَلَيْهِ السَّلَامِ إِذَا غَدَوْتَ إِلَى الْجَهَادِ فَأَطْلُبَ لِهَوْلَاءِ الْأَطْفَالِ قَلِيلًا مِنَ الْمَاءِ. He says, before you go to the battle, Abbas, bring a little bit of water for these children. Bring a little bit of water for these children. I don't care about my thirst, but these children, do something for them before you leave. Abbas nodded. He went to the tents where Imam Hussein's children were. When he went there, he stuck his head inside, and you know what he saw? He saw that the children are lying on their bellies on the ground, rubbing the moisture from the ground. They're so thirsty, there is no water. They're trying to get the moisture from the ground. They're lying on the ground on their bellies. When Abbas saw that, and they looked up to Abbas, what Abbas saw is that their eyes are coming out of their sockets. Abbas looked at the scene. He didn't have the heart to say farewell to them. He didn't want to say farewell to them. So he just told them, I'm going to bring you water. I'm going so that I can bring you water. So now what happens? My friends, understand this. Abbas goes, and you know the story, what happened after that. When Abbas goes and he speaks to these people, there are six things that he said. I will just mention them. Six things that he told the army before he attacked for the river. Six things he said. He said, listen, this water, Christians are drinking from it. This water, Jews are drinking from it. This water, your horses are drinking from it. This water, your dogs are drinking from it. Your dogs are drinking from it. What is wrong with you that you don't give it to the children of Rasulullah? Abbas went towards the river. The army moved away. They didn't want to fight Abbas. Abbas went there, approached the river, carefully filled the water bag. And now you see Abbas has been given an order by his imam to bring water. He has made a promise to his children, to the children of Hussein, the same children whose feet he used to kiss whenever he used to love Hussein. Those children, he has given them water. He has told Sakina that I will bring back water for you. So now when Abbas gets the order, and now he is making his way towards the tents, the army sees that and says, don't let this water go back to Hussein. Don't let this water go back to Hussein. So they started to attack him. He zigzags his way, trying to get away from them. Then as soon as he starts to zigzag, these people come from behind. One person came there and hit his left hand. Struck his left hand with the sword in such a way that his arm was cut off. And as soon as the arm is cut off, he says, you can cut off my arm, but I will not leave my mission. I will not leave my mission. He goes a little bit further, zigzagging. They're surrounding him now. And they approach him again, and another strike of the sword, and his right hand is cut off. He says, in qata'tum yamini, if you cut off my right hand, I will not stop fighting for Allah and Hussein. Now both his hands are finished. Both his hands are gone. Now Hussein has put the water bag in his teeth. He has put the water bag in his teeth. Abbas has put the water bag in the teeth. And the flag he's holding with his feet. And he's still moving forward, because as long as the water bag is there, Abbas just wants to fulfill his promise. This last one act of goodness that he will do for Hussein and his children before he goes away. And now his arms are gone. He starts moving forward, and then arrows start coming in. And these arrows, when they came in, one of those arrows, with all the muqaddar that Allah has meant for Abbas. Abbas, you know the muqaddar that you have. Abbas, you know the destiny you have. You wanted to bring water for Hussein's children. Now Allah will make you Babul Hawaij after this. So my friends, if you have any hajat, you have any dua, Babul Hawaij is listening to you. Hussein, Abbas will fulfill your needs, ask him, he will give it. Allah has given him that risk of being Babul Hawaij. That one arrow that came and struck the water bag. When that water bag was struck, the water started to flow out. It fell off. Abbas saw that. Abbas saw the water falling out. He could not take it. Now there's no more mission left. Now there's no more face left. Qamar Bani Hashim has lost his face in front of the children. Now Abbas doesn't want to go forward. He stands in his place on the horse. Arrows start coming in. They start striking Abbas. They start going into Abbas. Abbas does not care now. Now he's sitting there waiting for destiny to take over. So as he is sitting on the horse, one arrow goes into the eye of Abbas. An arrow goes into the eye of Abbas. And Abbas can't shake it off. You know, I heard this incident before. I might listen to this, my friend, so that you can see the pain Abbas is going through and feel his pain that he's going through. Understand, you see, a time when Alim, he was giving a majlis and he mentioned this riwayat, that the arrow went into the eye of Abbas. Some other alim who was sitting there, he came to him after the majlis and he said, you know, this, what you mentioned, I don't know if it's authentic. You should do more research. You shouldn't be saying these things that are not authentic. So this alim who objected, who said that this is not right, he is the one writing now. He says that when I went back and I went to sleep, in my dream I saw Abbas. In my dream I saw Abbas. Abbas came to me and then he said that you have done wrong with me. You are not good towards me. He says, but Mawla, what happened? He says, you reprimanded that sheikh who read this majlis, that the arrow came into my eyes. And you were saying that it's not true. He said, but yes, I haven't read it anywhere. So Abbas, he says, Abbas told him in his dream. Abbas told him, let me tell you that indeed there was an arrow in my eye. Indeed there was an arrow in my eye. And you know what? You know what I was going through at that time? When the arrow went there, I couldn't see anything. When I want to take off the arrow, I understood. I realized I didn't have arms. I was doing this with my arms, trying to take off the arrow. And when that didn't work, I was shaking my head. What is Abbas going through right now? He's sitting on the horse, shaking his head when someone comes from the back and takes a sword and hits him on the head. And hits him so hard, Abbas flies off the horse. Ajrakum Allah, Ajrakum Allah. Go ahead, my friends, cry, cry. Raise your voice and cry. Raise your voice. Let Fatima hear you crying. Let Imam Mahdi hear you cry. Because you don't know how much Fatima is crying for Abbas. You know, Imam Zamana had says, Imam Zaman, he says in his ziyarat, in that ziyarat when he remembers Abbas, he says, remember Abbas this way. Abbas is that shaheed. When he fell off the horse, he didn't have any arms to stop his fall. He fell on his face. Just a few more things and that's it, my friends. Now Hussein comes to Abbas. Hussein comes to Abbas. I will make this short. And you give your condolences. May Allah bless you. May Allah give you no other mourning than the mourning of Hussein. May Allah not make you cry for anything except for Hussein and his family. My friends, understand this one. Look at this. Hussein comes to Abbas. Hussein comes to Abbas. Hussein comes to Abbas. In short, there's one thing Abbas says that shakes Hussein so much that Hussein really was shaken up by this. You know what that was? Abbas said, listen, I made a promise to those children. I couldn't fulfill those promise. Hussein, have mercy on me. Be compassionate towards me. Don't take me back to the tents. Don't take me back to those children. Because those children think that Abbas, he hasn't said farewell. You see, Abbas, through his wisdom, did not say farewell. He said, I'm bringing back the water so at least the children will have hope. So those children are waiting there. Sakina is waiting there. Sakina is waiting there. Those children are waiting there. Abbas is saying, Hussein, please don't take me back. Leave me here. When Hussein hears that, when Hussein hears that, my friends, that's it. Raise your voices so you don't hear what's coming after. Don't hear me, what's coming after. Really, don't hear me. You won't be able to handle it. Hussein knew what was going to happen. It is said that when Hussein left Abbas, Hussein didn't turn around to see Abbas one time. He did not turn around to see what's going on with Abbas. He did not move around to see what's going on with Abbas. You know why Hussein was afraid? Because those children who felt so much security with Abbas. Abbas was the reason for the insecurity in the army. But when those fiends, when those demons saw Abbas lying on the ground, dead, and Hussein did not take him back, they paused on him, started cutting up his body into pieces.
To be near you again. Oh my Mola Ali, oh my Mola Hussein, how I wish and I pray to be near you again. Let me take you to Najaf, to my first Imam, to the tomb of the greatest Imam of Islam. Let me take you to Najaf, to my first Imam, to the tomb of the greatest Imam of Islam. And to Masjid-e-Kufa,